Hello, friends. Welcome back to Second Act with Bonnie Somerville. That's me. I hope that you are already subscribed and that you have downloaded the podcast. But if you haven't, I'm just going to remind you, please do so. And please tell your friends and go and give me that 5-star review and say something nice because I want to keep bringing you these great interviews. And that's the only way I could do it, apparently. I got to get more subscribers and more reviews. And please follow me at SecondAct_pod on Instagram, and also me, Bonz with a Z, Somerville on Instagram. I am really, really, truly excited to bring you this chat. This is somebody who is extremely important to me, and I do not say that lightly. This was my very first friend in the business I ever made, my very first pilot, which went to my first series 21 years ago. I was 25 years old. Oh, God, that's scary. She is a brilliant actress in every area, a brilliant friend, and has seen everything you can imagine. She's been acting since she was 8 years old. And in this interview, we really go there. We went deep. We talk about everything from getting fired to getting insulted to getting Me Too'd before there was a Me Too to worrying about getting married and having kids and what that would do to our careers, and how when we started, we had no power whatsoever and there was no social media. There was none of this. You weren't allowed to even talk about your feelings if you wanted to keep a job. And we've had some pretty crazy shit said to us, and we've had some pretty crazy things happen, and we've been there for each other, let me tell you, through everything from boyfriends to fired agents to agents firing us to shows firing us to parents to death to loss to being broke, being rich, being broke again. Not rich, but, you know, doing well. Anyway, this is someone I really love from the bottom of my heart. I actually get teary when I think about her because she was there for me through so much. Look, I'm actually tearing up. I'm such a nerd, but I love her very, very much. And her name is Miss Lindsay Sloan. Please enjoy this one. Here I am with Lindsay Sloan.
Hi, friend.
I'm actually the most excited for this one than I've ever been for anyone.
That's very sweet. I hope I remember any of our past and any of our stories, and I'm able to satisfy your needs because I'm so old now. And
oh my God. And I'm older than you, so don't say that.
No, but my brain is so much older than yours.
you've always had like brain fart memory with stuff.
I have natal depletion. I read an article that after my kids, my brain just shrunk and died. And I literally don't remember things. So it will be fun to try to go down memory lane with you.
Well, we could try, but we can also, let's start by telling everyone, I did my very first show called Grosse Pointe, which we're still not over the cancellation, by the way, on the
Still not over 20 nope. years later. And we still are waiting still for that over. Call that it might come back.
That was my very first pilot that I met you on. And it was 21 years ago. That is insane.
That's so crazy.
And it I just feels, saw our director.
But also not long ago at all.
It seems like yesterday. Day. But I saw our director the other night, Andy Fleming.
Oh, I love him so much.
And we talked about it. And we talked about you. And I said how I was going to tell. I said I told Lindsay I'm going to see you. And we talked about, which is, this is part of like the whole second act thing, that I replaced on the third day an Oscar nominated, I don't know if she has one.
She's won, right? She's been nominated so many times. I think she's definitely won.
Amy Adams, who I replaced on the third day of shooting, that you guys were already shooting, and it was like her third show she had been fired from, her third pilot.
I feel like she had told us that she was fired from something else before.
And we talked about that, and he said that he was recently talking about Grosse Pointe with Robin Schiff, another one of our great producers, and he said, you know what? It's so funny though. We were talking about you and we were saying that Amy could never have done that role. And I was like, really? Cause she's like the most brilliant, multi-talented. And he goes, no, but it just goes to show that it's just some people can just do some things. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm still not over the fact that like, why didn't I have her? Why didn't she get that? And I got her jobs. But like,
it's
that was
true. It's just that thing where I feel that as actors, when we go in a room and we audition, we're always just like, I know I'm right for this. I know I can do it. But that doesn't mean that the creatives on the other end are seeing the same thing. They have an idea of what they want. Amy Adams is brilliant.
Like, brilliant.
She's proven to be brilliant over and over again. And when we were there, there was just something for them that wasn't clicking. I remind myself of that story when I think of all the times I've been fired or replaced because...
You have, how many times have you been fired? You've never been fired.
I've been replaced. I was replaced in a movie where they reshot. I was in a movie called In the Land of Women, and I was in like the last scene, and it was like the climax building like up to like Adam Brody, like, you know, finally meeting the girl and having a meet cute. It was a movie with Meg Ryan that Jonathan Kasdan directed. And it was so fun and so exciting. And we shot it and it was great. And then he had to call me and tell me that when they tested, there was just some studio exec that was like, no, I don't feel like that's the girl that people are going to be excited about that he's with in the end. And it was, you know, I feel so much for the people that have had to make those calls to me.
That's a lot of empathy, girl. That you have more empathy than I do.
Obviously I feel bad for myself and it felt awful in the moment, but now that I'm removed from it and on the other side of it, it's like, it's not personal. It's like, whatever. It's one guy that saw that scene and was just like, I wouldn't date her.
Right.
That's how simple it is. How quickly dreams can be crushed in this.
But on the positive note, it's like, you know, if she hadn't gotten let go, I wouldn't have gotten that show, which started my whole career. It was my first pilot. I was 25. And then when I met her years later through a mutual friend, she was so like, oh my God, yeah, you got that show. And like, so happy and nice and sweet about it. And she's so open about that part of her life where she thought, I'm never going to work again.
Yeah.
Her agents dropped her. She was like absolutely devastated. Then she gets June bug and her whole life changes. So you just have no idea.
I know.
What do we always say? That we're always one job away from an Oscar in this business or an Emmy, like one job.
That's why I'm assuming that's why we stick with it, even though it's so painful. But the highs are so high. Right. The lows are so low. But I think we love it, but there's also some sort of masochistic thing that we've chosen to do to ourselves to stick with it, to stick with a career where there's so little control. I mean, I think that the narrative has shifted so much since we were younger, and now people are taking, like, have the control in a way that we never thought we could.
Well, we always talk about that. When I talk about that lately on the show, like when we started, there was no social media. There was no, we never thought we could be writers or direct. Like, we never thought any of that was possible. Like, now people are just multi-faceted, multi-titled people. Like, it's like, you're writing now. You're finally writing. You're writing something, right, for the first time?
Yeah, I'm trying.
Proud of you.
Thank you. I'm so proud of you for this. I mean, I don't even think it was that social media didn't even exist. It was that we grew up in a time in the business where we weren't even really allowed to have an opinion about a scene,
right,
like, or change a line, or we were hired help and we were grateful to have the job. And I think that when we would have even like our, you know, shared experience, and I'm sure progressing each of us separately on other jobs, but I remember Jake Kasdan when he directed one of the episodes of Gross Point, and he was the first director. Andy also, there was a lot of freedom in the pilot because Andy Fleming is just
actors.
He loved actors and he had so much fun. So we felt freedom in what we were doing because he was like, yeah, I don't know, try it. He's you're so weird. Do that weird thing.
Okay.
And he laughs and enjoys us. And the safer you feel, the more comfortable you feel to try things. But I remember Jake Kasdan, when he directed his episode, it was the first time that he was like, can we do one take where you just like go like riff and just improv the scene with him? It was like that. Remember that episode where the punk rock guy that my character fell in love with and I made out with him in the bar? But I had like
anyone listening to this, if you've never seen Gross Point, it is available. And I actually made my boyfriend watch the first episode and he loved it. And we still, Lindsay and I still get stopped by casting directors when we go into rooms and they go, you know, I love that show. People still bring it up to this day.
Ahead of time.
It was 1999. And if you don't know it, it was a spoof on 90210. It was written by Darren Star, and it was kind of like a soap opera, and we played characters in a show. So we played ourselves and then other people, and it was very inside, and it was way before they were doing that, and it was just too soon.
So smart and so smart.
Yeah.
Funny.
So go check it out if you're listening to this, because it is a really damn good show.
And we're proud of it.
So we're proud of it. And you'll see us as baby fetuses.
Babies. Oh, man. My skin was so shiny and dewy.
Oh, my gosh. It was so good. But, you know, you've been acting, when was your first job?
I've been acting for 900 years.
900 years. But what was your first job?
I started acting when I was 8 years old.
Oh, you were in a commercial.
My very first job was a commercial for the Church of the Latter-day Saints. A nice Jewish girl. And we
nice Jewish girl from the valley.
Jewish girl, by the way, that's how talented I am, is that I convinced them that I could be a Mormon. And we flew to Salt Lake City to film it. And Brian Austin Green was my big brother in it. And the guy, I don't know if you remember these commercials, but remember the commercials, the IHOP commercial, the guy Cliff, and you'd always say like, Cliff here at IHOP. Anyway, it was a big ad campaign when I was a kid, and he played my dad, and that was like, oh my God, Cliff from IHOP is my dad. So we filmed this commercial in Salt Lake City, and it was really exciting, and that was the start of my career.
So do you think that doing this commercial for Church of Latter-day Saints affected your creativity as an actor later on? Did that enhance your...
It did. I think that it opened up. I think it allowed me to be multifaceted. I didn't realize my range or ability until I did that commercial.
You were 8 years old.
I started 8, but then, and I did a lot of commercials. And then my first, I did like an episode of General Hospital. I think I was just a background artist. I remember it was like a winter scene, and my mom and I went to the mall to buy a winter, because I lived in LA, I grew up in LA, I didn't have a winter coat, and we bought a winter coat and kept the tags on because I had to bring my own wardrobe, and then I went and returned the coat after.
By the way, I've done that. People listening, I've done that for like big awards.
You've done that for red carpet stuff.
I did that for red carpet.
RIP, Barney's is closed, so you can't get in trouble for it. But you
Barney, no questions asked, they would take things back.
Take those back. I remember like there was a yellow gown that was so stunning.
It's so embarrassing, but I don't care. I'm going to tell the story. And I told Dave the story. I had got invited to, you know, one of our black tie galas, and I didn't have a publicist and I wasn't on a show. And anybody who doesn't know the business, when you're not on a show, you're basically like you have the plague. Like no one wants to work with you.
You're garbage.
No one wants to dress you. And I went and I got a dress, and it was a Dolce & Gabbana dress. And I think it was like $3,000, and I wore it and I left the tag in, and I was a nervous wreck. And then I returned it. But then I was in Us Weekly
with the dress
for who wore it best. And I won. And someone I knew someone that worked there, and they called him and went, we didn't loan Bonnie that dress. And I was completely busted, but there's no shame in my game, because you got to do what you got to do in this business. And that's all I could do. And I was
because when we were left to our own devices, we ended up on the what was she thinking list. We really were like living the life during those Grosse Pointe years, where we did get invited to places.
And it was the first time we were the leads of a big show.
Yeah, it was so fun and so exciting. But I remember trying to decide like what you want your style to be when you're like first getting photographed for stuff, is it shouldn't matter, but it really did, because you would get invited to more places if you were someone who had a good look on a red carpet. And we were making great money for kids, and it was really nice, but we didn't want to blow that money on really expensive clothes. No. And I also remember Sienna Miller had like just come on the scene, and her like cool boho, like she just had beautiful style.
She had that Kate Moss Edinburgh festival, like festival clothes look. And
yeah.
And like,
and I remember trying to emulate her, and it was such a hard fail where I wore like a dress over a turtleneck over pants. It was just a bad look. There was some article that they wrote about me in. Oh, what were these two girls called? They were actually really funny, but it was.
Was it the Fugly? The Fugly?
Oh, yeah. Go Fug Yourself.
Go Fug Yourself. Yeah.
They were always like, I was in that article. I was written about a few times on that website, and they were always very kind about my ability. So it was a real high low moment when it would happen. So they would say like Lindsay Sloan, like, and they loved Gross Point, and they were so nice about the show, but they said, this outfit is so bad that if Lindsay were a horse, we would want to take her outside and shoot her just to put her out of her misery.
So today's show is presented by Beachly. I'm super excited to be working with these guys. Beachly is a box of beach-inspired apparel and accessories, and it's delivered 4 times a year with at least $180 worth of stuff inside. But it only costs $99 a box. With Beachly, you get 6 to 8 pieces of premium apparel and jewelry and hats and all sorts of stuff for the beach. But guess what? Proceeds from every box sold helps fund beach cleanups by Heal the Bay, which is one of my favorite charities, and it's so important right now. You choose either quarterly or annual payments for your subscription, and you can cancel at any time. So go to Beachly's website, use our promo Bonnie to get $20 off your subscription. Again, use that code Bonnie, that's me, at checkout at beach.ly today. It's so awesome. I'm going to go get myself one. Okay, now let's get back to the show. Lindsay, I just remember us getting paid. We got on Gross Point. We hit it off. We were like, I was in love with you day one. I just literally wanted to be your best friend. And we became so close. And do you remember that we would go shopping and we would spend like hundreds of dollars on crap?
Yeah.
Because we were making money. We hadn't made money. And I look back now at that time and I'm like, I would buy like 7 turtlenecks in the same exact thing, like, but different colors, just because I never had an opportunity. Cause I waited tables and attempts before I got that show. So like I was literally a newbie. I mean, you'd been acting. I mean,
I was on Sabrina for a couple years before that. And I was
Sabrina. What? Excuse me.
Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Tell the audience Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
I was on Sabrina the Teenage Witch for 2 years before we did Gross Point. And yeah, it's not great to have access to money when you're young and dumb.
I was 25.
I think back to if I spent the money that I like spent on the Delia's catalog and just invested it, I could have bought a house at this point, like what that money would have turned into. But it's, you know, it's like, look, it's also part of just growing up and realizing that these jobs are, it felt at the time we were just going to keep working. Right.
Yes.
It felt like it was never going to, like, we were in the zone now. We were on shows that people liked. And it was, and then you did keep working. Like, you just kept going. And I would like constantly hit walls. Like, I never had the luck that you had with shows getting picked up or shows lasting as long as they did.
I tell people all the time. I mean, I said it on the intro to this podcast, like, part of what I was known for was like, oh, Bonnie always gets a show. And I would always get a pilot after a pilot. Literally there was a period of my life where I couldn't not get a job. And I remember you not working for a long stretch of time.
Yeah.
And me, I got right after that, I did, the Friends thing. And then it was the In-Laws. And then it was NYPD Blue.
As your friend watching it all happen.
But then it just literally stopped.
Yeah.
It just stopped. It just completely stopped. And it's like that feeling, like the whole second act theme is like, well, you've had so many, you've been acting since you're 8 years old, but it's one continual second act after another, after another, after another. And like, how have we managed? You and I have we've had serious emotion because we're such good friends. We've had really emotional talks about this, but like the devastation that we have had, like the real true heartbreak, I don't even like, how do you think you've been able to do it, honestly? Because I know you've had dark times, depression like me.
I don't know. I think because I've been doing it since I was 8 and I never had a fallback. Like there never, I started to go to college to get my degree and then I was on a show. And then I never went back. I never found another passion. And so I think, and it's what I said, the highs are so high. And when you're on set and you feel like you're part of a team and you're getting to do this thing that you love. I mean, for me, I never wanted to be famous. I just wanted to act. Mm-hmm. And so getting to act on set and knowing what that feels like, there's no other feeling in the world that ever matched that excitement.
It is.
For me.
It is the highest high in the world when you're on a show and you're a family and you're together and you're just creating and you get waited on. And I mean, I love listening to Howard Stern, you know, we're both huge fans when he still talks about doing the movie Private Parts and every time he has an actor on, every single time he brings up, I mean, the people would like bring me coffee and craft syrup and like, can I get you something? Can I wait on you? And you need a tissue.
Yeah, I mean, we're completely infantilized, which is.
But it is the best feeling in the world. Like I just did it finally again after, you know, I didn't work for 3 years and I just did a couple of episodes of Blue Bloods. And even just someone, I felt like I was 25 again on Grosse Pointe. So grateful. Like my attitude is so different than it was 5 years ago when I was kind of jaded and spoiled and a little bit like expecting, because that feeling of being loved and adored and wait, it's there's nothing like it, right?
Yeah, being valued and feeling part of a team. And there really isn't. I mean, whenever I get a job, I have, you know, I always talk to my friends and to Dar about what I miss the most is like having coffee with someone in the morning, like that water cooler.
The trailer.
Yeah. Like I just miss feeling, you know, there's part of me at times in my life where I'm like, I just wish I worked in an office because I want to go somewhere and see people and have a common interest and a common goal with people. That's what I love. And that's what I want. And so I have friends that every time I get a job, they like send me a thermos because they're like, here's, it's for your coffee. Like it's so exciting. It's happening again. And it's really what I miss. And then you have kids and the idea of someone bringing me a coffee right now, like honestly makes me want to cry because it would be so nice.
Dave brings me a coffee every morning.
Oh, you have a lovely, lovely man. Do you know who doesn't bring you coffee? 3-year-olds. They're not allowed.
But when you had like those, I just remember all the time, like we've had those talks about not getting shows. And I've explained on this show a little bit, Ilan and I talked about the whole testing. You know, back in the day when we started, you used to have to test 5, 6, 7, 8, like to the point where you'd be having a nervous breakdown and they'd tell you next time, show up and wear this next time, do this. I think those days have changed now. People are getting offers off of Instagram, but that's a whole other show. But all those devastating times, like people have asked me, how do you, I mean, my own mom, like she, you know, worked on Wall Street 35 years. She's like, I could not do what you do. It's like getting an interview for a job every day of your life, which is 90% of what we do is getting rejected.
Yeah. It's the hustle. The hustle is the hardest part. It's crazy to look back on my life and just think how I haven't had stability. Like if you added the days that I've actually worked where I've known where I'm going the next day and I knew what my job was and I didn't have that feeling of, am I going to be okay? Will I ever work again? It's so small. It's like maybe 2 years total out of the, you know, 40 something years that I've lived. And when you think, God, to only have security for that amount of time, I think artists are crazy passionate people. The only thing I can think of is that I love acting so much. And I feel like I haven't done my best work yet. And I think that's what's pushing me through.
That's exactly what I say.
I just want to show, like, I do believe there will be that job for me at some point that I will show what I'm capable of. And when it ends, I will think, you know what? I've done it. I've released it in some way and I got it out of me. And I imagine the beauty of like some sense of closure, not that I want to stop acting, but that I'll feel if, God forbid it doesn't happen again, I will be okay because I've done the thing. So I feel like all I'm doing is constantly chasing, wanting to do the thing. That's
all. Do you think you've always had that positive attitude about it?
No, I think that it's been a constant roller coaster. I feel like I've had 90 acts when I think of, you know, there were phases of like a very poor me. Why is this happening to me? Why? Because I was also always the person that the creatives wanted, that the writers wanted, the directors, producers, everyone wanted. And then I would get to the studio and the network, and I just wasn't the exec's cup of tea. Like, I don't know if they looked at me and were just like, we can't, she's not marketable or she's not hot. I mean, I heard she's not hot enough 9,000 times in my life.
It's and insane. So it's insane.
It, of course, it's going to knock you down and make you feel, I mean, look, there was the win. Like, we were best friends. We were inseparable. We finished on the same show. We both got accolades from that show. You went off and worked. It was, there was such ease there. And I hit a lot of walls and
it's you tested hard. For so many pilots. I remember
so many,
I mean,
and I was told I was getting every one of them. Oh, like I think it's why I think I'm so damaged, and it's why I'm so grateful when someone calls to tell me I'm fired, is because I'm so used of being like, I had so many times where someone told me I was getting the job and then I didn't get it. And then it's radio silence. And no one reaches out and explains why. No one apologizes, even to call and say, like, it was just some asshole exec that you're, you know, you're chocolate and he likes vanilla and he's not into you. And it always was a guy. It never, like, very rarely was it a woman who got fired.
That's the opposite for me. It's mostly been a woman. Do you remember that show I tested for? It was on the USA Network. I forget. It was a... I think we went out and celebrated, actually. It was like I tested 5 or 6 times and they told me you have the job, and I forget the name of the show now. It's probably better that I don't remember it. We went out, we celebrated, your husband was there. And then my manager at the time called me and was like, I don't know how to say this, but the head of the network, who was a woman, said, I don't buy it. She's not a leading lady. She can't carry a show. Ugh. And this was after like a 6 or 7. It was one of the most brutal test weeks. It was one of those weeks that it just wouldn't end. And I was at the edge of a nervous breakdown. And I'll never forget it. It was like, and then you just, it's like, you can't, I can't explain. No one can understand that feeling unless they've had it. You just.
It's so personal. What we do is so personal. There's no way that you can say it's not you. It is you. It's all you. They're literally saying
it's not you, but no, it is you. I don't like her nose.
I don't like your fate. I remember crying at one point to Jake Kasdan, who directed us on Gross Point. But then I did the TV set with him. Like, he went on to be
a great movie, by the way.
It's a great movie about pilot season, and how awful it is. But I went, like, the Kasdan family kind of took me in, and like Jonathan, his younger brother, is the movie that I did that I was fired from, but I also was in his dad Larry's movie that he filmed, and it was so much fun. But I remember there was a show that Jake wanted me for, and I was like I was the writer's choice. It was just like, it was happening. It was just, I had to do a chemistry read with the actor they wanted, and it was all, it was like, I was going through the motions, but this job was mine. And I suddenly didn't get the job. And I remember Jake calling, because he's a lovely person and he's a friend. And he's like, I'm so sorry. I don't even know what to say. I feel so bad because I feel like I've had to make this call to you so many times. And I was crying and I was like, is it my face? Is it just my face? Do I need to just change my face? Because I knew it wasn't my talent. Like, it's so rare. I mean, look, I've definitely blown it in the room. I watched shows that I did and I'm like, oh, I was phoning it in that day, or I don't know what I was thinking. That's awful. But it really is so rarely talent or ability. Like, it is our face.
It is. And it's what you said. I've heard that analogy. You know, someone likes chocolate, you're vanilla. Yeah. Or and you're like, I'll dye my hair, I'll cut my hair, I'll do a prosthetic.
Remember when they told you in between studio and network to go change your jeans?
Yes, and I don't want to say
who looked overweight.
I don't want to say who that director is, because he's a very big TV working director, and he was on a very big show that I loved as a kid. But I don't want to say what.
And he's married to an actress, by the way, which is so crazy that there wasn't a sensitivity. I'm telling you, there's just a sensitivity chip missing in this industry. I don't know if that would happen now.
No, no, no. You wouldn't be allowed. You would not be allowed now to say to an actress, you need to go and.
But this wasn't that long ago. I mean, this was, but.
I had 45 minutes in between the studio test to get to the network, and I went to the Gap, bought a new pair of pants.
Already so stressful. You're auditioning for rooms of like 35 people.
And no, it's stressful. I'm being stressed at the Gap. I mean,
I remember you calling me crying, and you're like, I just got out of studio, and they called me, and they told me that I look overweight, and, yeah. and you went in as the choice on that job.
I was the choice.
Yeah, and you're like, and now I feel like I'm not going to get it, and like I have to go get clothes that make me look thin. And
By the way, can we just say this was when I was really thin?
Welcome to Hollywood. It's so disgusting.
No, I think I was 29. Like it was like, and he.
Remember metabolism?
Metabolism.
Oh, metabolism, how I miss you.
And now it's like, and I admit on the show, like when I hit rock bottom at one point and I got let go from Code Black and my last relationship fell apart and I just went through it. My stepdad died and I gained like 25 pounds. Like I own it. But this was really truly a time where we're talking like Friends, Bonnie.
Yeah.
Like now I look back and I want to like punch that person in the nose. Like
I was
more stressed about getting the pants. And then I went to the last final round. I was a complete mess. I had to sing, totally blew it. And I was shaking and I literally walked out and I didn't get it. The other girl got it. And it completely sabotaged me. But yeah. I don't think people realize that, you know, when they talk about all the business, what women go through, you know, sometimes I'm a little bit like, wah, because some of it is part of the job, but that stuff should never be part of any job. Like that should be never.
We were also young at a time where people were pretty reckless with comments and.
Oh, there was no Me Too. Me Too.
Yeah.
I mean, the amount of stuff that was, I mean, the amount of times you work with a director that was like, yeah, honey, baby. All right. Hey, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, there were so many of them. Which is
not enough that I look back and feel like I wasn't the ugliest person in the business.
Oh,
but,
stop it.
No, I'm kidding.
But like, it's just so different now. And I feel like it's great. I mean, there's been so many changes, but I don't know. We really came up in a time where it was like, it was brutal. I mean, you had to duke it out in a room with somebody. You had to like, there was no like who knew somebody. I don't know. Don't you think that you really had to fight it out to get a job back then 20
years
ago.
Yeah, but I also feel as hard as it was smaller. Like the community in itself was smaller. So maybe it was 20 girls or would come down to, you know, 20 of us that were just constantly in this rotation and we would kind of alternate who would get jobs.
Yeah, you always saw this.
Now it just feels like the world, it's infinite. I don't know. It feels really hard.
But
the material is so much better. And so that's what's, you know, so frustrating is like the writing, everything is just so good now.
And also there were no net. I mean, when we started, how many networks were there in 2000?
We're so old, Bonnie. It's crazy.
I remember passing on, I didn't go read for Mad Men. Because I had just like come off like another like, oh yeah, yeah. And it was like AMC. And I remember saying, I'm not doing a show on like a network that shows movies. No thanks. Like it. And it was Mad Men. And it was the show that made AMC. And then now I always say you can't pass on anything. I mean, it could be a show for your phone, but that could be the next Oscar winning show. Like there's no limits now.
But I also think when I think of acts that they're, you know, at different points in your life, you choose jobs for different reasons. And when you're coming off a show, you're like, okay, now I know artistically, I want to go in this direction. Like I want to satisfy this thing. And maybe I'm in a position where I can, you know, be a little bit more picky than normal. And then there are times where you're feeling like I need a shift in my life. I want to take a job that's somewhere out of town. So whatever job that may be, I don't even care what the job is. I just want to leave. Then I had kids and it limited me so much. But now if there's, you know, like I did a sitcom for 3 years, there was a time where I was like, I don't know if I did so many sitcoms that I was like, I don't know if I want to do a sitcom again. And then that came to be, and I was like, oh, I can have breakfast with my kids and dinner with my kids and still have a job and go have coffee with other people. and laugh and have fun, I'm in. So
that's the dream job for a mom.
It is the dream job, but it's constantly evolving of like what we're searching for, what feels like it will satisfy us and satiate us in some way. And
do you think when you had kids, was that like a, well, I know for you that, I mean, obviously that's another act, but like, was that like a conscious, like change in your perspective of acting, like a new act?
The biggest change I've ever had, because I have two daughters, but when I first had Max, I remember testing, there was like an awful situation where I had, Max was maybe a month and a half, and producers that I had worked for were like, we want Lindsay to come and test for our show. We'll give her just a straight test. Like, go, let's just go test for it. And I remember I was like breastfeeding in the, like pumping in the bathroom before I went into studio, cause my breasts were filling up and like my clothes weren't fitting and you like sweat a lot. And it was just like, oh my God, physically, I just have no control over my body in the way that I used to. And it was so scary on top of trying to remember lines on major sleep deprivation. And I remember walking in the room and I was fine. I wasn't great. I was fine. I ended up getting cut at studio, which ego-wise is totally like devastating. But I remember when they called to tell me and, you know, they said, you know, this is who got it. There was a weird shift in my brain where I was like, she's someone's daughter. Like, how exciting for that person. And up until that point, I feel like I had been very competitive with people. And it always kind of felt like, why them and not me? And I had an instant shift of course it should be them. It should be them as much as it should be me. They're someone's daughter. They've lived a whole life. They have people around them that are going to celebrate them. And it just kind of, I don't know, it made me relax. It was, having a child has been very humbling in a way where
you had empathy. You had empathy in a way that you didn't have before, because it was all about you.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been
afraid. That's why I'm such a selfish, horrible person. If I just had a child, I'd be like, of course she should get it. She's somebody's daughter. Now I'm like, fuck her. I don't care.
Yeah. I mean, look, I've always had empathy in other ways, but I wanted the job. Like, I have been an aggressive hustler.
Yeah.
And you've been
hustling since you're 8 years old, man. You have done.
I also just think I don't have the energy to. My energy is going to my family and to my children. And so when I read something, I have to love it to even take the time right now to put myself on tape for something, because it's taking away from my kids.
See, I really genuinely, that sounds so, I love that you're saying that, because you had something else come into your life. Cause like, as actresses, I mean, we talked about this when we were young, like it is, you're very self-absorbed because you are your own company, right? You represent yourself. You're the president of your company. It's all about you. So you do become self-involved. It does happen. And I've heard that from other people too. When they had kids, it all of a sudden, it's not just about you. So you have to really want something. And if you don't get it, it's not going to destroy you as much, right? Because you have these little beings that kind of make up for it. And I think that's true of any mom in any business. My mom said that about working on Wall Street. Like, things would happen that were terrible, but then she'd come home to me. And she'd be like, and then it wouldn't be so terrible.
Well, it's very empowering. It's very, I did a movie once before I had kids, and in the movie, there was a line where like one of the Will Forte's character, like, has had kids, and he's like yelling at like a group of friends that had him have kids. And he's like, you guys think you're so cool. You guys think, you know, everything you, when you have kids, it's fucking varsity. Like, you guys are just JV bullshit. And I didn't understand it. And then I had kids and I'm like, yeah, this is varsity. Like, I know my strengths, the stuff that I deal with on a daily basis. When I walk in the room, I'm like, you're not going to break me. You're not going to tell me I'm overweight. You're not going to tell me I'm not good. I know that I'm good. I also know that I'm good. And I've been able to juggle 900 things before I walked in this room and delivered a great scene for you guys. So you guys can just suck it. Like, I hope you want me and I really want this job. And I know how great I would be if you hired me. But I also know that I have self-worth without you telling me that I'm okay.
That's amazing. That is an amazing place to be, because I know.
I mean, look, it's in this moment. We'll see what happens.
I mean, say that now.
My manager called yesterday and was like, I was up for a couple jobs. I didn't get any of them. And they were giving me the speech of like, but you know, like, this doesn't mean you're not talented. And I was like, honey, I mean, I know I'm talented. I was like, in fact, I don't think I was talented. I think I'm very talented now. I think that I was very lucky when I'm young. And now I do. I know that I'm great. And I can't wait for people to see it. So while I appreciate the love, like, I'm not the client that you have to give that speech to, because I'm not going there anymore in my head.
Isn't that empowering though? I feel the same way. Like when I was young, I mean, so needy and insecure and desperately needing that. And age, I remember my mom saying it, when you're, you know, it's all going to change. When you turn 40, you're not going to give a shit, blah, blah, blah. When you turn 30. And I remember being like, yeah. But it is so true that, like, for women, I just wish that we had that feeling when we were, I just look back in my 20s and some of the time I wasted, which of course you can't say that because it's part of my evolution.
Then what we know now, if we could go back.
I mean, the amount of money I would have in the bank when I was working.
But the angst and the pain, I wouldn't trade in any of it. Like, I look back at all of that, all of those times in our life with such fondness because it made us who we are. And especially now I have daughters that I get to, like, help them through those moments. And, you know, it's interesting, as a parent, you always want to protect your children and you don't want them to feel pain, and you don't, but I kind of sit back because I'm like, pain is important. Like, you have to write it out. You have to know how to self-soothe. You have to know how to get through moments that are really, really hard. Because
I mean, you started when you're 8 years old and you're starting to learn and you're getting rejected, like, you know, that's really brutal, but it did give you, you know, strength, independence. You know, you broke away from your parents. You know, your mom was your manager.
I moved out when I was 17 because I just wanted to, feel independent. I wanted
talk
to
about a second act. You had, like, your first act. You're like firing your own mother as a manager and moving out at 17.
Like, yeah, but that was more like wanting my own identity outside of my mom. Like, my mom, it was, you know, my mom was very, like, because I look back because of her, I'm very grateful I wouldn't do this. But there's also part of me that's like, who would I be? Who would I have been if I didn't start acting at 8? It's so interesting.
Did she push you to do that? Or did you say, I want to do this?
Well, I had a neighbor that did it. And I thought it was really cool that she was on TV. And I wanted to do it. And my mom did the legwork and, like, found an agent. And it was, you know, I think it was easier back then.
Momager. She was the original Momager.
The original Momager. It's still her email.
Kris Jenner. Kris Jenner, you stole that. You stole that from Lindsay's mom.
But firing my mom, it was more just like, I wanted my own identity. I wanted to feel separate and I wanted to feel independent. And I also wanted to go to an audition on my own and a set on my own and, like, be my own person. Because you grow up very quickly when you grow up on sets. You have to follow rules. You have to listen to adults. You have to, like, stand on your mark. You have to. So by 17, I was like, I got life. Let me just live it. All right. I got this, guys. And it's crazy because I think, like, oh my God, if my kids want to do that at 17, I would die. I would die if you would just, like, move out of our house.
I mean, I can't believe my mom, you know, when I left for LA, I was 21 and she was completely against it. And I had dropped out of school to try to act in New York and she cut me off. And my mom was so tough. And she was like, if you do this, you're not getting any money from me, because she didn't get to go to college. And that was her dream. And I got into this very fancy college, Boston College. And I look back now and I was like, oh no. Like, I'm doing this. Like, and there was no other option. And that's what I tell, like, some people, young girls that I've mentored or, you know, worked with. I'm like, you have to have that laser sharp, like, this is what I'm doing. And then we manifested it. And part of what I talk about, like, the whole second act thing, is when that kind of slips away, I felt that slipping away. When you lose that, like, laser focus, like, oh, no, this is what I'm doing. There is no backup plan. You manifest it. But if you slip, you start to, like, not work. You know what I mean?
There's
you
have to
keep
hunger.
That, like, laser absolute. When you're young, you're like, I will do anything to make this happen. You kind of have to keep that going forever.
Well, it's the real beauty of watching the business evolve, and that I feel that artists now have their own voice and their own way in, and everyone is self-generating and everyone is self-creating. And we grew up at a time where if actors got a studio deal or a development deal, it was a vanity deal. Like, they actually didn't want actors having opinions about anything. And so I have found it to be kind of challenging to shift from being a person who listens and obeys and follows the rules and fights for jobs, but when they tell me I'm not good enough, I have to just step back and wait for the next thing to come along, now to someone who's like, oh no, you can't sit back and wait. You have to do your own thing. You have to find your own voice. You have to sell yourself in that way. And it's really challenging to readjust to the way the business has, you know, progressed. It's a beautiful thing for artists, because if you have a phone, you can make something. You can be, you know, you can like get it out of you in a way that we, I mean, we literally had like 900 pound camcorders. Like
we weren't told that that was, I mean, I remember years ago, whenever I would bring up other things, it was always poo-pooed by my team. It was always like, oh, no, you don't want to do that. You're this, you're that. You're going to be a leading lady. Oh, you're going to get, you know, I was like, oh, yeah, sure. I'm going to win an Oscar and get an Emmy. You're right. Yeah, I'm going to be fine. And then it's like, no. And then that doesn't happen. And then it doesn't happen. And then life happens. And then life happens. But and now, yeah, it's like, that's why I did this, started this podcast, because it just was like, I want to do something. And also the stories of having a second act, it's like there's second acts every day.
Yeah, all over the place.
So now you're writing something.
I am. But proud also, of you. It's so interesting, because when I say it out loud, there's still the person inside of me that's like, oh, that feels a little embarrassing.
You're not a writer. You're not a writer. Yeah, that voice.
I do actually think I'm a writer, but I like it as a team sport. So I'm trying to develop something, and I just, it's that thing of, If I want that job that I look back on and I think there was the thing that I got it out of my system, why not try to create that job for myself? I see people all around me doing it. I think that it's really interesting, because I started this a year ago, and then all of a sudden there's a pandemic and the world has shifted. And I think that, you know, the market is totally different than what it was. And it may not be something that I move forward with for a really long time until things kind of right themselves again. But it's giving me, at least, especially during quarantine, at like once or twice a week, I get to tap into this other part of me and feeling like I have purpose outside of being a mom or being a wife or being a friend or being a daughter. And I get to feel creative and I feel empowered. And it just like gives me like a sense of worth, really, in the way that I would imagine this podcast does for you. Like, just, it's like, if you have a reason to wake up and like send someone a Zoom link, suddenly you feel like, look at me, I'm working. I'm a working girl.
I swear. I mean, I always say this, you know, Dave, I give credit. My boyfriend, he is, when I met him, it was literally fourth date, pandemic, quarantine. And he's a creative person. And he was like, why haven't you done this? And like,
all these, talking to me about this a year ago. We were like, what should we do?
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
It's like, what am I going to do? And he was like, why aren't you doing it? Like, cause he's like a doer. He's someone who is, and I need that. Cause like, I'm great with the ideas and the talking. There's a lot of talking.
It's because we have been silenced for, you know, the first half of your life. If you're kind of told that your opinions don't really matter, and it's better if you just stand aside and do what we tell you, that part of your brain just shifts and, you know, dies in a sense. And it's hard to like regain your footing and regain your voice.
Also, when you're older, it's hard, like scary. Like I said, when you're in your 20s, I mean, I moved to LA with $500 and I'd never even been to California. And my first stop was Venice Beach. And I was like, oh, and cut to, it was 6 years later that I got Grosse Pointe. Now, that said, that's pretty lucky, but that was a really hard 6 years.
You had a record deal. Like you have, you're also,
I got dropped twice. So it was like devastation.
I know, but it always to me was like part of your gritty tale. Like it's your story. And it's part like your edge. Yeah.
But I feel like I got older and then like I got scared and I started to get really scared. And then all my friends got married and people had babies and the dreams that I thought, you know, that were a sure thing, whether it's a hit show or whether it's a husband, none of that happened. And I just kind of got really down. And like this second act thing, I was like, this is like, Everyone has one. Everyone has one. You got to pick yourself up or you die. Like,
yeah.
What's
or
that?
Many. Everyone has many, many, everyone many, many. Yeah.
So what do you think your next act is? So now you've been, you're a wife, you're a mother.
Yeah. I feel like shifting into motherhood has been a big, a really big change.
That's two acts. Cause you've got two.
Yeah. And but then I think it's finding my creative, power and my creative voice in this new realm, like in being a mom, in living this mm-hmm. life.
Is and doing of, both.
Yeah. The balance is very, very challenging.
I remember us talking about having kids back when, cause you didn't have kids for a while. You were married forever and you guys were just the best couple and having fun. I remember talking about that fear of, you know, but if I have a baby, like actresses have this all the time. Am I going to work? Like, who am I going to be?
Who am I going to be? And also suddenly you can't make like decisions just for yourself. Like
right. you can't get a job and leave the next day.
And so for so long, I would say I'm not working out of town. I'm not doing anything out of town. And now, you know, we've hit a place where it's like, well, let's be open to it. If it's a great thing, maybe it's a wonderful, fun life experience for the whole family.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's something I'm able to
And maybe go away and take them to a city or a country for a few weeks or a few months, and they have a teacher and they see the world. Like,
yeah, I think it's about putting my desires back in front again. You know, my family and children will always be first, but I think that I really put things on the back burner, and it was kind of like, no, this doesn't feel right for my family. And now it's about finding the middle ground to whatever that may be.
And can we just say you have been with the same person for 20 years. And that is such an amazing accomplishment to me because, well, A, just the audience, I was there when they met. I was there for the whole beginning. I was there for all the texts.
Bonnie was on our first date.
I was on your first date. And not only text messages, it was that thing.
It was a BlackBerry.
It was pre-BlackBerry. You had the thing that was... not a pager. It was a...
Yeah, it was the original BlackBerry. The original one.
And
I did, by the way, have a pager first. I had a blue pager.
I remember, I bring that up because it was the 20th anniversary of Legally Blonde. And you and I were at the premiere together. And you were like super hardcore crushing. And I'm like, you guys have been together 20 years and you're still in love. And you have managed to talk about acts like that. You guys have always inspired me that you have been through so many acts in that relationship. And you guys love each other so much. That is like a huge accomplishment.
Yeah. I feel very, very lucky. And I think part of it too, is when I, you know, would have those moments of feeling so devastated that I didn't get the job or didn't get the show or the show didn't get picked up and all those like humbling, horrible, embarrassing, sad, heartbreaking, all the feelings you feel with them. I've always in the back of my brain when I'm like, okay, but what am I grateful for? How do I readjust? How do I get to the other side of this feeling? It's always been, I have the stability of a partnership. I have a home. I have someone that supports me. And I have children and I have, you know, I had healthy children and I have a unit. And I think that I spent from 8 until I had children where acting controlled me and this business controlled my self-worth and to the minute of the day, how I would feel about myself. And now I have a million other things. It's just a shift. It's growth and age and a shift in perspective. And granted, we're also living in a time of, I think, such life analysis and being grateful for what we have and the love that would help.
No way.
It's like, it doesn't matter. All the shows that I thought that would have been the one that made me, that would have changed my life. Those shows, I didn't get it. And then they were canceled after like 4 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Amy Adams was devastated when she got fired from Gross Point. Then she went on to live a wonderful, beautiful life. It's like, you just never know. And so the lows have been so low. I mean, I have been fired. It's been embarrassing. It's been public. The fact that then there's you're fired, which is hard enough, but then there has to be an announcement that you're fired and everyone has to read about it.
And also getting let go from a show that got picked up.
Oh yeah.
that I was on. And I, you know, I people always think I work, and it's true. Yes, I was very lucky, but I've never had a show go more than a season. And the only show I ever had that went more than 13 episodes was NYPD Blue. And it was because I was there for season 12, the final season. That was the only show in my entire career that I got a full season. And people don't realize that. They're like, oh, you always work. True. I've never had a show go more than one season.
Like, yeah, I haven't either.
One show to go more than one season, just to have that steady job, you know?
That's so funny. I just realized that Sabrina went a full season, but I was not, you know how they do like fractional series regulars. I was like 10 out of 13. So I wasn't even in every episode. Yeah. So it was difficult, but I've never, other than that, I've never been on a show. It's crazy. Because I do think, I look back at my career and I'm super grateful. And I think, you know, for people that have ever heard of us, or, you know, if they've seen us on something, they're like, oh, those people, they work. Oh, of course they've been on shows that it lasted. And like, no, I haven't at all.
And then, you know, it's funny. Have you ever Googled your net worth? Cause that's hysterical.
My mom,
like,
we rich as shit.
We are so rich. My mom always Googles my net worth. You know, whenever she's mad at me that I blew through all my money and I was an idiot and blah, blah, she'll just get in a mood and she'll be like, did you see this? And it's like 3 million or 4 million. And it's just so funny that I think people, you know, when you're also in reruns, like you and I are, and like your recurring roles, and they come, people just assume that you're always working because they see Friends all the time. So they're kind of like, I'm in their orb.
Yeah.
But I don't realize, like, well, that was 15 years ago. And yes, residuals are great, but residuals get down to pennies. You know, you get checks for a dollar. But I think it's like this concept of work for people that aren't in this world. It's very strange. Do you know what I mean?
Well, it also seems shiny.
Wait, Dave, I just got to, my producer just posted on my little, he saw one that said my net worth was $106 million. Is that why you
went out with you?
Where is that? Where is that? Serious, $106 million. I think that they must, I don't know. I think I'm worth $16. Is that okay?
I mean, look, we're very lucky that when we do work,
it is extraordinary.
It is very nice. But what people don't realize is, like, at this point, I've worked 8 days in the last 4 years. I worked 8 days on an independent film where there was no money. So we've always lived in, like, we're talking about, and it may seem tasteless to talk about how we wasted money at Urban Outfitters in our youth, but we've lived hard and fast with our money. It like comes and there's like a nice little windfall. And then there's years and years and years of nothing.
And when you're young, you don't know. I didn't know. I didn't know how to save because I grew up with no money. And I just thought no one's ever going to tell me I can't have anything again because I wanted to be able to do stuff I couldn't do when I was a kid. And it just was like, give me it all. And now I'm like, why did I care about bags and shoes? Like, what?
I know. It's so ridiculous. It's so ridiculous. None of it matters. The real beauty to, well, one of just aging in general, but what quarantine has done of just like, I don't want anything. I just want to know that the people I love are okay. Like I can't even imagine putting on a nice shoe and like going anywhere. I just want to like wear comfortable sweatpants and just like live in my bubble with the people that love me and feel safe. And like, hopefully when I emerge, I get to make some great art, but then I want to come right back to my safe place. And that's it.
Such a great attitude though. I love you.
I love you too.
I miss you. I'd like to give you a hug. I just can't believe like you were my very first. I mean, we were like, we're like family. I have so much love for you. I mean, I was 25 years old. I knew nothing. And I thought you knew everything because you'd been on TV for so long. And I was like,
she knows everything.
And we were just inseparable. I mean, you've seen, talk about acts. You've seen all of
mine. I've seen all the acts.
And some of my acts were not so good.
But it's so nice to see you in this place. Like, I think where you're at now and the person that you're with and your drive to do this and your appreciation for work, none of those things happen without all the acts that you lived. And I've always looked at you as like Elizabeth Taylor. Like I look back at, like, if I were to write my biography, like it's not that interesting. Like, I'd have to definitely have someone come in and punch it up. But when I looked at your life, like, there's a lot of color to the life that you've lived. Mean, a lot of color.
A lot. I don't know if color is the right word. What? What did you say? Oh, my boyfriend, my Dave is saying, does that mean I'm going to get married 8 times? No, honey, I'm 46. So this is it. Yeah. So you better get cracking. If I have 8 more left, you better get going. All right. So I have to, I'm going to give you my five questions.
Okay. Oh, I haven't heard this part. What is this?
Well, this is just like a little, it's just a little wrap up, like little okay. questions. I'm not like Andy Cohen.
Like, oh God.
It's not like Real Housewives, but so we've had so many stories that are crazy with all the roles we've done. Do you have one particular story that is just so absurd? You don't have to name names, but something that happened on a job or a show.
I'm like, oh, I have no memory at all.
But you have so many, like something that was just so like crazy, ridiculous, like the Jesse story, when he told on the podcast. That was
yeah,
just
no, that insane. Was great. That was, God, do I have any of those stories? I mean, I did do a movie that I was filming in another country, and there was a comedian who I idolized so much who was playing my dad. And we were like shooting a scene, and there was just something that wasn't work. Like, it was a comedy, and there was just something that wasn't working. And they were setting the cameras again, and we took a break, and we went back to set, and all of a sudden I was like, oh my God, he's so high. Like, I had to lean in and kiss him and hug him. And it was just like the strongest scent of pot I've ever smelled in my whole life. And I wasn't like naive to the fact that people did that, but I never on a set. Like, I was such a professional and so type A that I couldn't even imagine.
Yeah.
And I just remember trying to shoot this scene, and all I could think about in my head was like, oh my God, this person is so hot. I'm just looking around like, everyone knows this, right? We're not going to pretend that this isn't happening. And meanwhile, he's so genius. It was like the greatest take ever. Like, because he's so weird that his cadence, everything shifted. And I was like, oh, this is why we love you, because high. You're probably high in every movie.
And now we know that like people are high pretty much all the time.
All the time. I mean, but this was at a time where like, that was not the case at all.
All right. What was the role that you've done that you think was the closest to like who you are as a person?
Well, I mean, Gross Point, I was playing an insecure actress. Who's painfully kind, which I do think like my MO is wanting to be nice and wanting people to feel comfortable. And so I do feel like I felt very connected to playing that character.
But you have gotten way stronger over the years since I met you. You were very much a pleaser, you know, wanting everyone to take care of everybody. And then you learn boundaries, and then therapy, right?
Therapy. People should try it. I just did this movie with Shailene Woodley where I played her older sister, and I play a mom who lives in the valley who has a kid. She loves someone to live with me. And I was like, yeah, no, I've got this. Don't worry. Like, you just roll. Trust me. I'm going to give you gold on this, because I'm like very tapped into this person. So
where do you think our characters would have been today, Gross Point, Courtney? Where would we be? What would we be doing? Although no one's even going to know.
I feel like Courtney would have been Me Too'd all over the place and probably at the forefront of the like Harvey.
Well, considering that every episode they had me in a bra, a push-up bra, literally my boobs were, I made jokes on that show. Like, my boobs are basically like my butt. Like, Courtney was all about the push-up bra, and so probably Me Too'd all over the place.
Me Too'd everywhere, just like dripping in Me Too. Where would Marcy have been?
Oh, Marcy.
Marcy.
I love myself. People like me.
I feel like Marcy would have probably like gotten pregnant by Dave and then had to leave the business, but was fine with it because
she had $1 billion.
She had $1 billion.
Your uncle owned the network, right? Or your dad?
Yeah.
Was it your uncle?
We couldn't talk about it, but yeah, my uncle owned the network. She was okay. So we were all okay.
All right. What would this Lindsay right now in this moment say to that Lindsay back then? Like, the one thing you would give her advice, like the most important thing you would give 22-year-old Lindsay?
Right? I would say feel comfortable having more of a voice and standing up for yourself. And when your instinct is to perform something a certain way, don't let people tell you that you're wrong. I there are so many moments where I was on set and I just innately knew what needed to be done. And I was directed a certain way and told not to do something. And I wish I had the strength to say, like, I am so happy to give you what you want, but I would like to also be able to do the one thing for myself. And I know that it may not have gone over well, but I feel like there's just was a lot of missed opportunity to just have strength in who I was and to know how capable I was. I did not give myself credit for how capable I was.
And since you were working so long, why didn't you give me advice on how to be a freaking normal person back then?
I feel like we were pretty normal.
Oh my God, I had to go through so much hell to get here.
But your hell was more, I feel like your personal life bled into your work life. Mm-hmm. And made it maybe more hellish just because you didn't have the stability. I think what you've done is so, you should feel so empowered and get so much credit because to be out here without a family and to go through a life of like in and out of relationships I had the stability of not just my family here, but I had a partner for 20 years going on this crazy ride with me. And you were in and out of having pockets of people. Mm-hmm. And it's not easy to live an unstable career in an unstable personal life. So you have to give yourself so much credit for getting to where you are, for being, you know, for being self-aware, for having the desire to find your voice and move forward and take charge. And I mean, we're like babies breaking out of our shell, learning that like our voices do matter. It was just crazy.
And I didn't grow up knowing my voice mattered. So it took me, I always say like, I'm such a late bloomer. And like you, like I said, I hosted a dinner party for 4 of my closest friends that were all pregnant, including you. Remember that?
Yeah, I do remember
all 4 that. People at the table, but me. And I was like, these bitches are crazy. Like I couldn't even imagine it. I was like, and I was even like 36, 37, still not ready. I wasn't a fully formed person. I just always tell people now, like I finally accept and forgive myself, which is part of, I think the biggest thing is forgiving yourself of all the mistakes I made because that was my journey. Like if I met this person now, I would have blown it completely. Like this has been my journey to get here.
Yes. You know? You have to make the mistakes. Life is very messy, but also like I say, life is interesting and it's what gives you color and it's what gives you your stories to tell when you get older.
And it really does. And the stories, like, especially you, I mean, your girls are so lucky, like that they had a mom that has done so much and been through so much. Cause like, that's part of my looking up to my mom, you know, like she had so much to offer me because of all of her mistakes and all of her work. And that's what you're going to have for your girls. They are going to look up to you and be like, mom did what?
Yeah. And now I try to, you know, turn the rejection or, you know, like we're all together in this bubble right now. So they're hearing if I put myself on tape. And so my 8-year-old is always like, did you hear, did you get the job? And like trying to explain that it doesn't really, it's not that fast and it doesn't work that way. But then also saying like, yeah, I did hear and I didn't get the job. And, you know, I'm really sad about it because it was something that I really wanted, but it just makes me want to, you know, try harder and keep going for the next one. And I'm like, oh, I get to turn this pain and this bad feeling into a lesson. Even Dar was my husband. We were talking the other night and he's like, your recovery period is like, he's like, I don't even know when you get bad news anymore because it does like, where it used to be, you know, tears and we'd have to talk about it. Cause I'm just like, I don't have the energy. I don't have the time. And also they don't get to break me. I know I'm good. I've just hit this place where I know that I'm good and I'm not going to let not getting these jobs define myself.
Damn right. That is the best way to end this podcast. That is the best way because you know what? You're right. And I finally got to that point too. I went through the worst period of my life personally, professionally, physically. And now it's like, I feel the same. It's like, It's like, they're not going to break me. You're not going to break me now. And I love that you said that you still haven't got, like, I was going to say, you know, I always ask people, you know, well, what do you think your next act is? But you said it. It's like, I feel exactly the same. You haven't gotten to do your, you know, your Meryl Streep, your Sophie's Choice yet. And you know that you can, and you know that you will. And that's how you have to believe. You have to believe that, because
like you're right.
You still have, we're not. And now, by the way, now, remember when we thought 40 was old? Like, now I'm like, what? Like, what? Like, have you seen some, have you seen J-Lo? Like,
well, I'm always like, Jennifer Aniston is our guiding light, is our North Star. And I'm like, 50 hot, like get me to 50. Cause she looks amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it does take a little extra work and maybe a little help here and there. Not, ain't nothing wrong with that.
It exists.
It does exist. And it's not over. It's never over. And now we get to take charge. Like you said, we get to decide and we get to be creative and we get to continue.
And we get to
going.
Do it at a time where it's recognized that our voices do matter. And that if we're ever in a position where we start to feel small or feel like there's someone that is trying to, you know, take our power away from us, that we, I think now would have the strength to stand up for ourselves in a way that, you know, I'm excited to go work and be creative in an environment where I can trust my instincts more than I've ever been able to do before. So,
And also I'm excited to go. I mean, I just worked on Blue Bloods and I was just so grateful they had me back, you know, and I just was sitting at the table. I was just like, I love this so much. Like I'm good at this, man. Like I this is who I am. And it just gives you that, like, you just remember, like, this is why we do this. I love it. We're good at it. Whether it's, I don't care what the job is.
No, I mean, I remember growing up, like if I heard my dad on a work call, and you can just tell, like, there, it feeds into your energy of the day. If you hang up the phone, you're like, I nailed that. I was great at that. Or this is a community I feel that I should be a part of. I see it in my husband, who's not an actor. I see it even in my kids. Like when my daughter is part of, like, does great on a spelling bee, it's like that youthful, we get to have that thing of like, I feel good in my skin right now. Being on a set makes you and I feel really good in our skin. And so I think we just have to keep chasing the opportunities where we get to, you know, experience that.
Yeah, I totally agree.
And support.
I love you, Lindy.
I love you, Bonobomb.
You're literally one of my oldest and best and dearest friends.
I'm really proud.
I get emotional right now because I just, like, we've been through so much together. Like, you're just so important to me. I mean, I literally, like, the first friend I ever had as an actress, like,
highs, lows, so much heartbreak.
So much heartbreak and growth.
All of it.
Well, I can't wait to see you and hug you.
I can't wait to hug you too. I mean, don't touch me
tested.
For a while.
I'll get tested right before I see you. I promise.
Don't come too close to me.
Thank you so much for being so open and honest.
I love you, friend.
I love you, friend. Told ya. I told you we got into some good shit, didn't I? I'm not crying. I'm done crying. I'm really mad. I forgot to bring up one of my favorite things that she's done that I know you've all seen. It was a huge cult hit. Bring It On. Hello, Big Red. God. I went to see that movie with her, the first screening of it. I went with a big giant group. We saw it in the theater in the Valley. Oh my God, I forgot to mention that. Anyway, God, I love her. Follow her on Instagram. She's Lindsay Sloan Up at Instagram if you want to follow her. And don't forget, please follow me at Bon Somerville, which is my Instagram, and send me those questions because I am going to start answering them. Send me whatever you want. You never know. You never know what I might pick. And secondact_pod is the official Instagram page for this podcast. So please follow me there as well. I'm so glad that you were here with me for that one. I'm really, really proud of that one. And I feel like we shared a lot. And thank you so much for listening. Please give me that 5-star review. Download, subscribe, wherever you get your podcasts. And say something nice. Say something mean. I don't care. Just leave 5 stars. Fuck it. Why not? I'm really excited to keep going. I love doing this, you guys. And I love you for listening. And I hope that you all really enjoyed that super personal, intimate interview. Have a great one wherever you are. Sending out love to the world. Bye-bye.